Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Last year, it just started dropping. This year, it's been pretty bad.
We visit a South LA recycling center that has its ups and downs. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, February 28, 2012. I'm Emily Frost. The Los Angeles Police Commission voted today in favor of a proposal that changes the policy for vehicles that are impounded. As Evan Budrovich reports, the new policy affects unlicensed drivers.
If unlicensed drivers were pulled over previously, they would have their car impounded for 30 days. But today, the Los Angeles Police Commission voted 4-1 in favor of a new policy to shorten and clarify the rules for these drivers. The new policy was proposed by LAPD Chief Charlie Beck. It would allow unlicensed drivers to retrieve their impounded cars in as soon as 24 hours, but only if offenders paid their fine and had no records of missing their court appearance. Critics say the change will encourage undocumented immigrants to drive more in Los Angeles. But Chief Beck says the new policy will help safe drivers who don't cause accidents and who have insurance. The only commissioner to vote against this proposal was Alan Scobin. He cited a study by AAA that shows unlicensed drivers are 9 times more likely to be involved in hit-and-run accidents and account for 5% of fatal traffic accidents. The city council can choose to use its authority to overrule the commission's action by a 2/3 vote by March 9th. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
Voters in L.A. County may soon get to vote on a law requiring porn filmmakers to use condoms for on-set sex. The organization behind the initiative said today it has over half of the more than 232,000 signatures needed to put the measure on the November ballot. Logan Healy has the latest on today's developments.
The AIDS Healthcare Foundation announced at a press conference this morning it already has 120,000 signatures in support of the measure and still has until June 5th to get the rest. The new law would require producers of adult films to obtain a public health permit from the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health and pay a permit fee set by the department in an amount sufficient to necessary enforcement. The same rules already apply to massage and tattoo parlors countywide. Brian Chase, Assistant General Counsel for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, said the group is confident they can get the rest of the signatures they need by the June 5th deadline. Under the law, condoms would be required for all acts of vaginal and anal sex during the production of adult films. Oral sex is not included in the initiative. Chase said the organization wants the industry to follow the same rules that employers nationwide are required to follow. For instance, the book's mandate has a law on use in adult film. Condom use does not seem to help films, but it's to enforce it. Have the resources. And announced that a press has 100 morning. It already has 1,000 signatures and 20,000 measure. And is in support of June 5th and still has until the new to get. The AIDS Healthcare Foundation claims the purpose of the measure is to reduce sexually transmitted infections by regulating the adult film industry. The industry argues its monthly testing of performers is sufficient and worries consumers won't buy condom porn. Diane Duke, executive director of the Free Speech Coalition, the trade association for the adult film industry, said the measure could cause performers to be even less safe than under the current practices.
You know, the concern here is if the government comes in and starts messing with regulations and mandating their own regulations, the ones that work will fall to the wayside and our performers will be less safe, or production will go out of the country or underground.
Duke claims there hasn't been a transmission of HIV within the adult film industry since 2004. A spokesman for County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky, whose district includes the San Fernando Valley, a major hub for adult filmmaking, told the Los Angeles Times on Monday that the state, not the county, should regulate the condom issue. The state already has a law on the books mandating condom use in adult films, but does not seem to have the resources to enforce it. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
Occupy activists held protests today before the LA Police Commission and City Council meetings to call attention to a foreclosure that ended in an arrest. The woman arrested is Blanca Cardenas, and today her husband is speaking out. Jake O'Brien reports.
Gerardo Quiñones never thought he would see the day when his wife, Blanca Cardenas, was arrested. But it happened last Wednesday. the bank foreclosed the couple's North Hollywood home and sold the property to someone else. When Cardenas contended that her family still owned the property under the bankruptcy law, Quiñones says the police arrested her for trespassing.
You know, when they arrested her, there was already four officers over there. And they still called for backup. And she's not resisting the arrest.
Cardenas is being detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement after it was found she does not have U.S. citizenship. She is facing possible deportation. Members of Occupy LA, like Kwase Nkrumah, have rallied behind Quiñones and his family, saying the foreclosure and arrest were unlawful.
LAPD does not have jurisdiction in a foreclosure situation, yet they interceded against this homeowner who is, you know, actually supposed to be protected by a number of legal shelters here.
A recent audit by the San Francisco County Recorder found that 99% of foreclosures in that city involved questionable activity, with 84% of them involving clear violation of the law. Members of Occupy LA plan to gather outside of the LA County Recorder's offices to demand a similar audit, while Quiñones hopes to know the fate of his wife soon. Jake O'Brien, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. Tonight, expect a clear but chilly evening with a low of 44. Tomorrow, we'll close out February with cooler temperatures, a high of 61 and low of 47. Thursday will be more of the same, a high of 63 and lows in the mid-40s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we examine why we're susceptible to power and corruption in government. With the economic downturn, recycling bottles and cans has gone from a hobby to a lifeline for many. The popularity of recycling centers as an employer of last resort has created competition and forced down prices for both recycling centers and bottle collectors alike. Natasha Zuvez reports.
It's hard to miss GNP Recycling Center on West Jefferson Boulevard.
Every little bit counts.
Its corrugated metal walls are painted bright yellow and neon turquoise, and the bees buzz happily around empty soda cans as men and women sort plastics and metals into bins. It's also hard to miss Edward Deaver. 51-year-old Deaver rolls two big buckets of cans into the center four times a day, 7 days a week. He says growing up on a farm in North Carolina, he never imagined he would be here.
Never in my life would I have ever thought I would ever been homeless or had to do recycling.
In 2002, he was shot in the head and chest in Iraq. The bullet that grazed his brain was an injury he thought would take his life. Instead, it took his military career and slurred his southern lilt.
Because I'm the sole survivor of my family, I had nowhere to go.
And he couldn't find work. Deaver was on the street within a year. He says his lowest low was walking around the Los Angeles neighborhood where he used to live and being stopped by police.
It hit you.
It hit him that he didn't belong there anymore. It prompted Deaver to start recycling. Now he wakes up at 5:30 in the morning and visits up to 40 locations a day to collect recyclables. He only takes what he can drag by hand. By nightfall, he says he's exhausted, but he usually has $40 in his pocket. Although GNP is a lifeline for many, workers at the recycling center say with the downturn in the economy, business has also decreased.
Starting last year, it just started dropping. This year has been pretty bad.
They say the number of recycling centers in the area has doubled in recent years, meaning more competition for customers. GNP may have to lay off two of its six workers, which worries cashier Cesar Lopez. He has a three-year-old daughter.
You kind of depend on the people. If they don't come in, then we don't really get paid as our hours.
Deaver has also noticed an increase in competition. He says he used to make three times more than he currently does every day, and two other recycling centers have opened up near where he lives. But convenient or not, he's sticking with GNP.
I like the people. Well, they always been friendly, you know, good. They kind of help you. They kind of tend to watch out for you. It helps me move forward.
Move forward to an apartment. Devers started renting his own place 6 years ago with the money he made from GNP.
It was a big change. I was like so thrilled. I didn't even know what to do.
He says that first night,
I went and bought a big old pizza and sat down and watched TV.
Deaver is a rare success story among recyclers who are not also lucky to have a place to call home. Natasha Zubes, Annenberg Radio News. Beginning tonight, L.A. City Council member Bernard Parks will host a series of meetings on neighborhood councils. The first one tonight will be held in West Los Angeles, followed by another meeting tomorrow night in South Los Angeles. As Kira Brecky reports, the goal of the meetings is to improve the neighborhood councils.
10 years ago, the neighborhood city council system began to try to make City Hall more responsive to all parts of the city. Volunteers from all over Los Angeles dedicated their own time to tackle problems in their neighborhoods. They are people like Iona Diggs, chair of the Voices of 90037. Diggs was recently interviewed by journalist Melissa Liu.
The reason that I'm on there, because I am dedicated to improving our neighborhood, because I care.
The councils were started to increase community participation in the political process, but they have faced problems. That's why 8th District Councilmember Bernard Parks is hosting a series of 5 meetings throughout the city. Parks was recently named chair of the Education and Neighborhoods Committee, which oversees neighborhood councils. Dennis Gleason is Parks' press deputy.
As long as there are concerns out there about how well do they spend money and are their elections fair and was it truly stakeholders that were voting and elected the board members, if there are those outstanding issues, then that kind of gives an excuse, I guess, for them not to be taken seriously. So he's really hoping that he'll be able to strengthen the system so that they can really play a stronger role in Los Angeles city government.
Sometimes neighborhood councils have a hard time simply functioning and getting enough people to the meetings. Linda Lux is on the board of neighborhood commissions and also president of the Venice Neighborhood Council.
It's really hard for grassroots organizations like the neighborhood councils to function and to grow and to be effective. And so to help in that regard and in my opinion, there needs to be some standardization and conformity to make it easier for everyone to function on the same page.
In Los Angeles, 15 council members represent 4 million citizens, which breaks down to 250,000 people per council member. Because of this, 8th District Press Deputy Gleason says these neighborhood councils are essential.
They really help the city and the council kind of zero in on what's important to the community and what needs to be paid attention to.
John F. John formerly served on the Griffith Park Neighborhood Council and has been active in other councils.
It's important for neighborhood activists to attend Councilman Park's outreach meetings because he's a new chairman of this committee, and we want to impress upon him the importance of the neighborhood councils.
After they get comments from the meetings, Park says he will come up with motions to bring some changes to the neighborhood councils. The meetings will continue until March 8th. Kira Brecky, Annenberg Radio News.
Former Bell politicians charged with misappropriation of public funds were in court today. A judge dismissed one of 2 felony cases against former Bell Mayor Oscar Hernandez and ex-city councilman Luis Artiga. The judge refused to dismiss corruption charges against former Bell City Manager Robert Rizzo. All 8 of the Bell defendants are due back in court in April. A recent study places Los Angeles high up on a list it would prefer to be at the bottom of. According to researchers at the University of Illinois, Los Angeles is only 2nd to Chicago in the most public corruption convictions since 1976. LA has had over 1,200 convictions. I spoke with Jennifer Overbeck, professor at USC's Marshall School of Business. She specializes in researching power and corruption. I asked for her reaction to the study.
You know, I always have to wonder if that's actually a signal that LA is doing something right, because in order to convict, you are being vigilant enough to find people who are committing corrupt acts, and you are prosecuting those acts and following through, and you're doing so successfully. And I would say that there are a couple of dynamics that can make it really easy for corruption to happen. One is that when people are powerful, they are disinhibited, so they tend to look for rewards in their environment. They tend to really sort of hone in on those rewards, and then they tend to pursue them. They become very action-oriented, and so they're much more likely to go after what they want. Because LA is a very wealthy city, there are a lot of people who have a lot of power, political power, business power, entertainment. I think that you've got an environment that makes both sides of the equation sort of ripe for difficulty or ripe for abuse.
If we're seeing so many headlines about corruption, like the Bell scandal, why aren't we learning?
Our general sense is not that we have a great deal of power to change the system. And so given that, it's kind of natural psychological adaptation to when we feel deprived of control ourselves, to believe that there are sources of control out there that are benevolent and good because of our own sort of anxiety or sense of vulnerability or sense that we cannot control the world. We have to adapt to the world that we're given. We sort of put a smile on it, which is sometimes a distortion of reality.
In LA, you know, this is sort of a one-party town. Do you think that that plays a part in corruption, that there's no checks and balances?
So although LA is a one-party town, the way I interpret LA's political system is that it's a multiple community town. So there may not be parties, but there are clearly these sort of stakeholder communities, some of them based on race or ethnicity, some of them based on maybe industry. But just look at race and ethnicity. I mean, I think that there's a strong African-American community. There's a large Latino community that maybe sometimes is not as organized, but certainly has a lot of potential political power. And I think that you have political leaders who are serving those communities. And so I think there are probably checks and balances in that sense. However, I also think that when you have a strong affiliation with this identity-based community, and the result of that, I think, is that leaders will feel that they are doing good when they are serving their community, particularly if their community has a history of being disadvantaged. Although I am not in any way saying that I would think that corruption would be disproportionately among disadvantaged communities, but I'm just talking about like the justification that people could come up with. So if you're serving a disadvantaged community, for example, and so you feel sort of emboldened to do what it takes.
Moving forward, now that this report has been released, what do you think we can do better?
I just think that if people know that they themselves have this tendency to be forgiving of leaders, but that those leaders may not always deserve that, that they have to remember to be not, you know, I think suspicious, but critical. So as somebody's power increases, our demands that they be transparent in their ethical decision-making decrease. Like, we let them be more secretive. And that's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. So what we should be doing is setting up formal transparency structures, you know, formal accountability structures.
That was Dr. Jennifer Overbeck of the USC Marshall School. Tomorrow is Leap Day, that extra day in February that comes every 4 years. And in honor of February 29th, Disneyland will be open for 24 hours straight. The Anaheim Theme Park's Marathon of Fun runs from 6 a.m. tomorrow to 6 a.m. on Thursday. This will be the first time that both Disneyland in California and Magic Kingdom in Florida will stay open for 24 hours on the same day. Now we check in with Kendall Fisher to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thank you so much. Tonight we will give you the primary results in both Arizona and Michigan. Then we have the latest on the deaths in Redondo Beach. And finally, the alleged shooter in Ohio was in court today. We'll provide you with the details on that at 6 p.m. tonight on ATVN.
Thank you so much. Lindy Hop, Swing, Charleston, these are all popular American social dances with their roots in the African diaspora. The Central Avenue Dance Ensemble performs these dances to educate as well as entertain. Jessica Kalslau visited their show this weekend. Check out her story on our website, annenbergradio.org. And while you're there, keep clicking. That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Anna Catherine Brigida, John Doubled, and Jacqueline Grant. Aaron Schrenk is our producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost.